Please welcome Al Franken. Sorry about that. I guess I'm your MC tonight, so first thing I need to tell you is unless you desperately, desperately need a liver, turn off your cell phone. We're just doing our show on the road, and an embarrassing thing happened in Sacramento. During our radio show, the guy's phone went off, and I lost my temper. I yelled at him. It turned out he needed a liver, and he had just gotten some very good news. There had been a motorcycle accident, and the guy hadn't been wearing a helmet, and his family signed an organ donor thing, so it was good news, but I kind of felt like a schmuck. So unless you need, if you need the liver, keep it on, because you never, you don't want to lose your place in line. Spoke to this conference a couple years ago. Since then, I've been doing some stuff on the radio. Oh, you know about it, I guess. When we announced that we were going to do Air America Radio, Rush Limbaugh said, liberals aren't going to listen to talk radio. Liberals like nuance. We started, and as you may know, we kind of shot ourselves in the foot right out of the gate. The original chairman of the board of Air America led a lot of us, everyone, to believe that he had invested enough in Air America that we could lose, not break even until the third year, and it turned out actually he'd only put in enough so that we could, needed to break even by the third week. And well, it was kind of embarrassing. We lost a couple stations, and then Rush said, well, that proves that liberal radio doesn't work. And O'Reilly said the same thing. And so then I knew there was nothing I could do but just keep doing the show and do it the best I could. Then the ratings came out, and radio ratings are quarterly, and they don't come out. It takes about 4 months to get your first rating period. And in Portland, Oregon, we quintupled the ratings of the station there, which had been oldies. And that's, I love oldies. I love them. But it beat Rush in Portland. And And Rush said, it was like, Rush, look, you get, well, of course, the Portland's part of the left coast. It's the most liberal town in America. Well, I thought you said liberals weren't going to listen to talk radio. Blah, blah, blah. When we started, right before we started, there was a talk radio conference for Radio and Records magazine, and they were laughing at us. They were laughing at us. And this last conference, I was a keynote speaker. And they said, the one thing about, and I have to confess this, the one thing about the radio business that interests me least is the radio business. But I've learned a little bit about it, and I've learned that radio just works on format. And we have developed, radio industry people keep saying, you developed a new format. You started a new format. I go, what's the format? Because I thought format is like talk, or music was like a format. And they said, you've started liberal talk radio. And I go, oh, good, good. It turns out there's a market for this thing. And we're now in all top, all 10 of the top 10 markets. In about between 55 and 60% of the country. And we do it different than the other guys do it. We do it by serving our audience and not manipulating our audience. I'll give you an example. And people, I nexus myself a lot because I want to see what people are writing about me. And a lot of, one of the biases of the media that I talked about in Lies and Lying Liars Who Tell Them is among all the other biases in the mainstream media, there is this extreme laziness bias. And so I see a lot of people write about my radio show and what I do on the show. And they just say, he's just like Rush Limbaugh, but on the other side. I actually had William Raspberry, who's a columnist for the Washington Post. And I got mad at him at the time. The show had been on about 2 weeks. He said, I haven't listened to the show, but if he's doing what I think he's doing, this is very dangerous for the country. And I got very mad at him, but now it's like, God bless him. At least he said he hadn't listened to the show. But I have a lot of people who... write about what I do in usually it's in glancing ways. It's not a review of the show, but it's about, oh, you know, how bifurcated or how poisonous the atmosphere is in America, and that's because of me and Rush Limbaugh. And so I try to explain to people that what I'm not the mirror image of Rush Limbaugh. I'm the opposite. And the example I like to give the most is about a few months ago, one of the researchers on the show came up to me. We monitor Rush, and he came up to me where Rush said something which reflects what the right likes, the part of the mythology that the right likes to use when talking about the middle class, about the minimum wage. He said, my friend, 75%. Of all Americans on the minimum wage are teenagers in their first job. So I told the researcher, okay, well, that's wrong, look it up. And my researcher went to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. it turns out that 60.1% of Americans on the minimum wage are 20 and above. So where did Rush get his theory? Because as a teenager, I had three or four jobs. I imagine maybe 13% of people on the minimum wage are teenagers. Not 75% of all Americans on the minimum wage are teenagers. And clearly, Rush got this statistic directly from his butt. And it went out his butt, through his mouth, over into the microphone, over the airways, into the brains of ditto heads who believe this. They believe this stuff. We get our labor statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Rush gets his from the Bureau of Rush's butt. Yeah, I'm just going to move on. I want to get this thing moving, okay? So, first I'd like to introduce Bob McChesney, who, as you all know, is the Free Press co-founder, and his scholarship and activism have inspired us all. Please welcome Bob McChesney. Bob?
Well, thank you all for coming. Had a great 2 days so far, and we're just beginning. The fun's about to get a lot better. Before we get started, I want to thank a few people who made this conference possible. Just there were a handful of funders who stepped forward and supported us with this conference, and they deserve special recognition. When I'm done with them, let's give them a round of applause. Glazer Progress Foundation, Joyce Foundation, Nathan Cummings Foundation, Otto Haas Charitable Trust, Quixote Foundation, and the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation. So let's give them a round of applause. I think, as you all know by now, Bill Moyers will be speaking tomorrow morning at our closing plenary. I'm also pleased to announce tonight that he is going to be introduced by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board member, Dr. Ernest Wilson. So look forward to hearing Dr. Wilson, who's here attending this event, who's on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's board, introduce Bill Moyers tomorrow morning. And this plenary, by the way, will be open to the public. This plenary will be open to the public, so people in the community interested in attending are welcome. You know, we've accomplished a lot in the last couple of years in media reform, and I think after 2 days here, I mean, I went home tired just thinking about all the work we had to do in front of us. I don't know about anyone else here, but I've been in meetings talking to people. There's so many great things we have to work on. There's so much before us. And one of the great things about being in a movement is actually doing something. That's not just sitting around talking. That's not just sitting around sort of matching theories. Is that we get to learn from our experiences. And in my view, there are a couple great issues, a couple points we've learned in the past couple of years that I want to share with you, because I think they're very important in helping us frame and understand where we go in the next year, two, or three, to help us be stronger and not weaker in the face of what's going to be, if we're successful, increased attacks upon us. Because make no mistake about it, we're going up against one of the most powerful lobbies in this country. And these guys aren't going to throw dandelions at us when we come after them. I've made a career studying these guys, and believe me, they take us very seriously. We know now they take us seriously. They're planning for us now as they plan how to do their deliberations in Washington. And we have to understand that and prepare for that and be prepared to go against these guys. I think the first thing I'd like to bring up is we've got to make it understand that when we talk about media reform, we're not strictly talking about policy reform. That's not all media reform is. True, our media system is based on policies, and getting the public to weigh in on these policies, to have informed public participation on these policies, is key to everything we do. The more public participation, the better the policies, the better the system, the better our society. That's the bedrock of our movement. That's what we need. But that's not all there is to this movement at all. There are two other crucial parts of the media reform movement. First, the critique education literacy component. Criticizing the system, understanding how it works, educating people about it, doing the hard work of examining and studying the existing system. There are so many groups that do this well. Many of them are here. I hesitate to name names because I know the ones I leave off will be some dear friend who will pour a drink over me after tonight's presentation. So I'm not going to name any, but you know who they are. They're extraordinary groups that help us understand how the system works and educate us. Now, this is very important work. I rely on it extensively. This sort of work, critiquing the current system, is very valuable to us because it forces the system to reach its maximum capacity. It lets journalists do the best possible work. It empowers business, the most enlightened leaders, to do the best work in the existing system. But it also has limits. It also has limits. Left to its own, if it's not linked to reforming policy or an independent media, there's only so much you can do by critiquing the system. You just sort of frustrate yourselves with showing how bad the system is. It's got to be linked to change. So that's one crucial part of the movement. The second part is crucial, is doing independent media, doing alternative media, especially nonprofit and non-commercial media. Here again, we're flooded in this conference with people who are doing phenomenal media, and there are so many that it's difficult for me to even think about naming them. I'm only going to name one, and the reason I'm going to name them is the Pacifica Network. The Pacifica Network... Bless Their Soul is airing this live coast to coast in this nation. And isn't it interesting? You know, I have a confession. I'm among friends here, so I think I can tell you all this. I did not get a call from the Fox News Channel about televising what we're doing tonight. But the Pacifica Network, we're getting 4 hours of live programming nationwide from this conference tonight. We desperately need independent media. We need it now. It's not something that can wait. And the exciting thing we all know today is with new technologies, we can make high-quality media far less expensively and have much broader reach than ever imaginable just 10 years ago or 15 years ago. But at the same time, we have to understand these technologies are not magical. They aren't like a magical wand. They don't obviate the concerns of politics and inequality and justice. They don't eliminate those concerns. They don't eliminate the need for policy. In fact, I think you can argue we need policy reform more than ever with these new technologies, not less than ever. Intellectual property, spectrum, internet access, ownership, advertising, the list goes on and on. All the crucial policies that will shape how these technologies can be and will be deployed, who will have access to them, how much influence they can have. That won't happen magically. It's going to be the result of policies, of politics, and that's what we have to engage in to maximize the effect of these extraordinary technologies. All three of these branches of the movement need to work together. They need to complement each other. And I think as we move forward, we always have to keep that in mind. Conferences like this have to bring all three branches together at all times. It's simply the way we go forward, it's the way we succeed. Now, the second thing I think we've learned in the last couple of years is that it's a sensitive issue. And it's one we've talked a lot, I think many of you have considered. And this is, you know, is media reform a left-wing movement? Is this a movement for progressives? Or to put it in a more pejorative manner, is media reform a movement that's simply out to replace conservatives with liberals? Is it a movement that basically wants to get rid of Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly and replace them with Al Franken and other people we like? Well, thank you, Congresswoman. I'm glad to know our people in Congress think that's what it is. Well, let's keep that one in-house. Okay? Pacifica, you can erase the last 30 seconds of this talk. But, I mean, seriously, look around. Most of us are progressives. I'm a very proud progressive. My concern with media isn't media per se, it's media per quo. In my view, media reform is necessary because it is what's needed to have viable democracy. Viable democracy is what's needed to have social justice and human happiness. What drove me to media wasn't an obsession with postal rates. It wasn't an obsession with spectrum policy. It was an obsession with social justice. Inequality is what drove me here. Militarism is what drove me here. Racism is what drove me here. But the idea that this is strictly a left-wing movement is completely bogus. This is not a liberal issue. This is an issue that unites all of us who believe in non-corrupt policymaking. It's an issue for all of us who believe the decisions of this country about media should be made with the informed consent of the people. And understand this. Our opponents are not conservatives per se. Our opponents are the big media corporations and the politicians they own that corrupt the policymaking process. That's who we're fighting. In fact, the reason why our opponents like to say that we're just a liberal or left-wing movement is that they're freaking out. They're scared to death. They are engaging in name-calling because they know that when we get to talk to people in this country, many self-described conservatives support us. They don't see why this isn't a conservative issue. Believe it or not, there was once a time in this country, and for many self-described Americans, there still is a time in this country when ideas of local ownership of media mean something to them. That's a conservative value. Believe it or not, there was a time in this country when conservatives opposed government propaganda. Remember that one? And there still are some self-described conservatives who oppose government propaganda. Believe it or not, there was once a time in this country in which conservatives opposed censorship. And there are many self-described conservatives in this country who do oppose censorship still. And believe me, from our work, what we've seen at Free Press and across the media reform movement, we know that there are very few conservatives who want their children's brains marinated in advertising any more than liberals do. These are issues that unite us. In fact, what I think you'll find is that these terms, liberal and conservative, when you get down to the issues we're organizing around, internet access, community internet, fair policymaking, don't always mean a great deal. Our opponents use them to scare people, because the thing they're most scared of is an engaged public. They depend on an apathetic, ignorant public so they can continue to run the system and make the policies to their benefit. And they can characterize us as a bunch of wacky liberals, tree huggers, or whatever the usual Rush-type pejorative, then they think they can beat us. That's the only way they can beat us, though. They really have no other way they can beat us. Let's be clear about this. The idea that we simply want to dump, sorry, Congresswoman, the idea that we simply want to dump conservatives and replace them with liberals or leftists is nonsense. Our vision here, our mission here, is to expand the range and quality of media, not to censor some to replace it with others. To expand the range and quality of media. Our opponents know that as soon as this issue hits the oxygen of public attention, they lose. They only win when it's kept secret. We cannot allow their cynical ploy to work to characterize us in a misleading way. This is a movement for all Americans. Let's let all of them participate in policy debates. Let's believe in democracy, and let's let the chips fall where they may. It's my great pleasure now to introduce two of the greatest Americans in public life today. The Federal Communications Commission is an unusually powerful body in our government. Unlike most regulatory bodies, it issues licenses and regulations valued in the tens, even hundreds of billions of dollars. Yet I regret to say, through its ignoble history, it has not been staffed by our most prestigious or prominent public servants. So when I say the two men I'm about to introduce, are arguably two of the very finest members of that body. Some would say that's like saying I'm describing the two best ice hockey players from Malaysia. But even with that caveat, I want you to understand these are particularly courageous men because the sort of abuse these two men have taken inside the Beltway for going against the grain, for taking chances, for believing that the public has a right to participate and the media policies that will affect and shape our country's future, for holding to that core democratic conviction and not wavering and demanding that the public be allowed to participate in these policymaking. The heat they've taken is great, and they've withstood it. They've stood tall. They've been stronger as a result of it. It's a great pleasure. We're going to introduce them one at a time. We'll start with the junior member of our two esteemed guests today. A member I think all of you are well aware of. He's been one of the leaders of the fight to have democratic policy making this country. He was one who went out to listen to people across the country and has done so for the past 2.5 years as a member of the Federal Communications Commission. He's also, without question, the finest musician in the Federal Communications Commission history. Please join me in welcoming Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein.
Thank you. Thank you. I see if you all stand the ovation. Thank you. Wow. What a way to start. First to be introduced by such a hero like Bob McChesney. He deserves a standing ovation, too. This man has changed this country for the better. Thank you, Bob. I mean it. Bob and all of the leadership of Free Press have done so much to help us throughout these hearings that we've organized, throughout everywhere we've gone, and these events are so tremendous, and we learned so much, and all of you learned so much. And we've come so far since Madison. I'll never forget Madison. And you know what I'll probably remember the most is how Bill Moyers gave the greatest speech, I think, in the history of the media reform movement there. And it's like the Bible of our movement. And he traced our heritage back to the revolutionary spirit of our founding fathers. And like those brave patriots, we've overcome enormous odds in beating those who, by all accounts, appeared stronger than us. And we won that first big battle because, like those patriots, we were fighting for our own country. And we fought for it with the belief of our revolutionary forebears that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And you are the ones who are standing there. You are the ones who have been so vigilant. We hear a lot of talk now in Washington about freedom and democracy. How about uplifting the quality of our own freedom and democracy right here at home? I mean, the whole world is watching us. The whole world is seeing what we do, and we have to lead by example. And look at the media and how that is leading by example. What the media produces is really exported around the globe as the most influential expression of our culture. We can't afford to simply reinforce negative stereotypes about an increasingly coarse and violent culture. Our media should reflect the diversity and the rich artistry that is our true character, the spirit of St. Louis, like we're voicing it right here today. And like Bob said, even as we fight this battle for media consolidation, we need to fight one of its most pernicious symptoms, I think, which is the increasing commercialization of the media, which is an outgrowth of it. We see thinly disguised payola fueling homogenized corporate music with no room for new, vibrant, or local artists. We see video news releases masquerading as news, PR agents pushing political and commercial agendas, squeezing out real news coverage and local community concerns, product placements turning news and entertainment shows alike into undisclosed commercials to an unwitting public, rapacious advertisers preying on the unsuspecting minds of our children. And Bob's right, that unites right and left and everybody in the middle. Nobody wants our children abused like the advertisers are doing it to our kids today. And it's time that the FCC steps up right now and bans interactive advertising for our children immediately. We should do that right now. But let me report a little glimpse of good news from Washington, actually, on this front. Just 2 days ago, I was testifying before the Senate Commerce Committee about the need for government to let viewers know when it's behind a video news release. And we heard a bipartisan commitment. There is Republican support against this, for making a permanent fix to require disclosure by the government. So it looks like covert propaganda paid for with your tax dollars is getting the treatment that it deserves. But that's just such a small part of it, and there's so much more to do that we need you to do, because you're the troops that can and will call corporate media to account. And here's something you need to do, just a thought to leave you with. One, if you see a video news release, you see a product placement, or you see a news segment that looks to you a lot like an advertisement, hit the record button on your VCR or your TiVo. Number two, watch the whole thing and check if there's a disclosure at the end anywhere in the broadcast. If not, it may be payola, and that's a violation of the law and of FCC rules. So three, if you catch them red-handed, send a formal complaint to the FCC and be sure to copy me, because we'll get it investigated. That's right. Together. Because we need you to do that. We need you to monitor, because people aren't doing that. They don't know. We don't get any complaints about this kind of thing. So you do it for them. And people will be shocked and appalled, and we'll shut it down. We're going to shut down this fraud that's being perpetrated on the American people by the media, and you're the ones to do it. So you've really done it already. I mean, thanks to all of you, we've gotten this whole country up in arms over media consolidation. And we can continue that fight, and while we're doing that, we can continue this fight against commercialism. You've galvanized everyone's attention. The FCC, Congress, the White House, and the courts. You've made media ownership what I thought of today as the third rail of FCC politics. And you're the energy that charges it, that gives it the life, that makes people so scared of it, that makes people so afraid. And you make people in Washington very, very nervous about ever touching it again. So I want you to keep that energy flowing through it. So if anyone dares to touch it, they're going to get the jolt that they so richly deserve. Now we're going to need all the energy you can muster to get that done, because we've got to open our airwaves. We've got to restore public interest obligations on broadcasters as they enter the digital age. And we've got to keep the internet open and free. We want to keep power from concentrating in the hands of a few media giants and restore control to our local communities where we live and where we raise our families. That means building municipal broadband. That means maintaining PEG access. That means opening new wireless broadband spectrum for community programming. And it means expanding low-power FM. So we have to, together, protect our legacy as Americans, the free flow of ideas and information that our revolution secured so many years ago. And like those revolutionary Minutemen, our very democracy depends on you. And like them, it is you who will be remembered for the fight and the victories that you are going to be celebrated for generations to come. So thank you for everything you do for America, and thank you what you do for media concentration efforts. We really appreciate it. It's made the world a difference to us. Thank you.
I sort of feel like we've got Ruth and Gehrig here. You know, this is actually it's Gehrig. I say Ruth batted third, yeah. So, coming up now, one of the great pleasures when we started Free Press, John Nichols and I had the privilege to go to Washington. I think the first month that was established, and we got easily enough got an appointment with a member of the FCC. And I go in his office, and I knew I was in pretty good shape when I saw a well-thumbed copy of my book, Rich Media, Poor Democracy, on his desk. It looked like it had been worked over pretty hard, and so I knew it wasn't read by one of my students. And John Nichols and I had a chance to talk with Michael Copps at some length about media, and we discovered we were dealing with something that's a very rare breed in Washington, D.C. today. That is a genuine public servant who believes in honest government, fair government, and really believes that government can be and must be a force for good in the world, a force for justice, a force for enlightenment. Michael Copps rose heroically with Jonathan Adelstein in 2003 and led the fight to protect public interest values in the media ownership fights. He has stood there day in and day out, leading the fight ever since then. He stands prepared today as we move into the future to join us to lead the fight to preserve a democratic media system, to build policies for a democratic media system. He is a true hero for our times. Please join me in welcoming Michael Copps.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Free Press, for bringing us together and keeping us together in this great crusade for media democracy. Thank you for everyone in this room who is making this a weekend that America can be proud of. More than 40 years ago, at the height of the Cold War, John F. Kennedy went to Berlin, and he said to those who doubted the future of freedom behind the Iron Curtain, "Let them come to Berlin." Tonight, we say to any who doubt the future of free media in America, let them come to St. Louis. Because what I have seen this weekend in St. Louis is that this great grassroots crusade for media democracy is alive, it is well, and it is together, and together we are going to bring it home to victory for every citizen of this great country. It took a lot of people to bring this issue to the forefront of the nation's consciousness 2 years ago. It took people raising their voices in protest, in song, in books, in pamphlets, on websites, and blogs, in whatever media and whatever forum they could manage to penetrate, working hard and working together. You moved this issue outside the D.C. Beltway and onto the highways and byways, leading into every town and village and hamlet across the heartland of America, and what a difference you made. Across the political and cultural spectrum, you banded together in a common cause. Some 3 million Americans contacted the FCC to express their concern about media concentration. I didn't know there were 3 million people in America who even knew there was such a place as the Federal Communications Commission. Thanks to you, they learned. And you know, in these times when so many issues divide us and we're called a 50-50 nation, or maybe now 51-49, groups from right to left, Republicans and Democrats, concerned citizens, parents, creative artists, religious leaders, civil rights activists, labor organizations came together and fought together for diversity in the media. They fought in the red states, they fought in the blue states, they fought everywhere they could, they fought for America. Now your voices are needed again, and they are needed more than ever before, because these issues are hurtling back toward us. In truth, they never went away. Those awful rules that the FCC majority passed 2 years ago to loosen our media protections have been sent back to us by the courts. That's the good news. The bad news is sent back where? To the same folks who dreamed them up in the first place. They screwed it up once. Believe me, they're 100% capable of screwing it up again. So I have to tell you, I'm worried. Worried, of course, about the effects of further consolidation on the entertainment and news and information we get. Worried, of course, that anything with the name independent on it seems to be on the endangered species list. Worried about jobs, news anchors, and radio and TV journalists no longer needed as stations are consolidated, technicians, engineers, all kinds of workers told their livelihoods are gone. Worried about what big media does to minorities, how issues are not covered, how people are wrongly depicted in programming, how little minorities own or have to say about the direction of our nation's media. Worried about creative artists who can't get airtime on their hometown radio because hometown people no longer control what the consolidated stations play. Let me ask you a question. When Appalachian bluegrass and New Orleans jazz and Motown disappear from the dial, is America really going to be better off? Here's something else I worry about, and you need to worry about it too, and it is this. A lot of pressure is going to be brought on the new Federal Communications Commission to write new rules, to write them quickly, and write them inside the commission and far away from the spotlight of public participation and public input. I can see a scenario where big media pushes us to do one rule at a time. Just go ahead and do newspaper broadcast ownership 1 month, another rule a month after that, piece by piece, piecemeal, piece of cake at the time. If we let them get away with that, they'll digest the whole cake. And I have no intention of letting that happen, and Commissioner Adelstein has no intention of letting that happen. But it can happen without another mass outpouring of public participation like we had 2 years ago. If citizens insist upon their rightful role in the decision-making process, citizens will win. But that's the only way we will win. So tonight, I ask your help in this all-American crusade to reclaim the people's media for the people. Consider this a call to action. Don't listen to those who counsel that now is not the time to fight. Don't let the usual suspects inside the Beltway write the rules. Jump in with both feet. Involve your friends, your neighbors, anyone you can. Convene meetings, write letters, write articles. Take to the internet. Use every resource you can access. Do everything you can, and then do a little bit more. A lot of work to do? Sure. A steep climb? Yes. Powerful interests on the other side? Absolutely. Winnable? I've got a two-word answer to that. Damn right. If we roll up our sleeves, all of us, advocates, creative artists, elected officials, consumers, citizens everywhere, we can settle this issue of who is going to control our media and for what purposes, and we can settle it in favor of airwaves of, by, and for the people of this great country. Thank you very much.
Weren't the commissioners great? And thank goodness all the other commissioners on the FCC are just as good. You know, earlier when I spoke about Air America, you know, I didn't mean to suggest in any way that we're the only liberal media out there. It's just a full disclosure, Clear Channel ordered me not to mention Pacifica. Also, in the interest of full disclosure, the Department of Education paid me not to mention Armstrong Williams. And you know what I think we should do is also just have a round of applause for everyone who organized this event from Free Press. Josh Silver, Yolanda Hippensteel, John Nichols, and of course, Bob McChesney and Free Press. Our next speaker is Davey D. He's a hip-hop historian. It's a long history. He is a journalist, a DJ, which I think means he's a disc jockey. And a community activist. I know what that is. He is the webmaster. Don't know what that is. For one of the largest and oldest hip-hop sites on the web, Davey D's Hip Hop Corner. And he's co-host of tonight's live Pacifica broadcast. Please welcome Davey D. Davey D. Good day.
Well, first, thanks for having me here. Second thing, big shout out to my home station, all the folks at Pacifica, so I'm glad to be a part of that. More importantly, thank you, all of y'all who have been doing this work. I've been involved with this sort of struggle about media accountability for a very long time. I think I can safely say, when I speak, especially for a lot of us who are in communities of color, dealing with the onslaught of media injustice and distortion has forced us to be in the fight, whether we cared to be in it or not. Turning on the evening news and constantly seeing depictions of black males as criminals, unintelligent, and every other negative pathology that people like to talk about and the Bill O'Reillys of the world make a good living off of misreporting has forced us to be in this fight, and it's been going on for a long time. But there was a time where you wouldn't have this many people coming together to talk about reforming and changing the media. So give yourselves a lot of props for being out here, because this is a very strong showing. The thing that I always tell people is that media, we, at this point in time, 2005, we can no longer afford to treat media as a passive spectator sport. 2005, it requires us to step it up and be interactive. Interactive means that we hold everybody who is reporting the news, who is presenting information, who is on the airwaves that our tax dollars help pay for, we have to be in their faces 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every angle possible, whether you're coming at it from the low end, from the policy side, whether you're creating your own media to be competition to them, but we have to hold them accountable. Because I can tell you, as somebody who's been involved with some of these stations that have laid out some of the groundwork for some of these ongoing assaults, and I work for Clear Channel for a number of years, that they spend a lot of time studying and figuring out ways to seduce and attract and lull a lot of the people who aren't in this room to sleep and make it seem like what they present is something that is all good and therefore there's no problem, until one day we wake up and find out that there's a lot of things we don't know about, there's a lot of laws that have been passed, there's a lot of things that are missing that are very important to our lives, but by then the train has left the station. So it's up to us in this room to not only continue to do the work that we're doing, but also to inform creatively and intelligently all those who may not find this issue very attractive. We have to do that. That means we have a responsibility to, first of all, to truly know the full spectrum of this game. I often tell a lot of the rap artists, before you get in the business, understand the game, that it's a business. Know the shot callers. If you don't know Rick Cummings or Jeff Smullyan or John Hogan or Doc Winters or Steve Smith or Kathy Hughes or Alfred Liggins, these are people from Radio 1, Clear Channel, and Emmis Broadcasting, or Steve Rivers. If you don't know these people, then there's a problem, because these are the folks that shot call what goes on these airwaves day in and day out. And when we talk about radio, especially urban radio, in every city in America, these stations are the number one or number two or number three station in the market. So when we talk about a lot of the things about poor people and crime and prison industrial complex and things that we need to do to change that, and we look at media as being one of these agencies that may be moving people in the wrong direction but has the potential to move them in the right direction if it's used creatively and effectively, then we got to know that these are the people that are 40 and 50-year-old men and women behind the scenes calling the shots, deciding that at 7 at night you can hear the yin-yang twins talking about wait until you see my D-I-C-K, and that is not a problem. That is a 40-year-old man that makes that decision, but then we'll blame the artists and we'll blame the kids for falling prey to the seducing techniques that these people do. I'm very happy that there's a lot of us on the other side of the spectrum, that hip-hop spectrum, the communities of color spectrum, that have been fighting a good fight and really making some headwaves. Malkia Sorrell, who was here earlier from Youth Media Council, probably talked to you about the very effective campaign that we ran in San Francisco with a lot of local artists who looked around and said, well, you know, news and information is cool, but for us it's the fact that local artists don't get on the airwaves. And so there was a well-heeled campaign that required us to monitor the stations and take notes and keep bringing the heat up. And we identified, we sat in the room and strategized, what's the weakness? And this is something that all of us can do. What's the weakness? So that we can make sure that when we shoot the shot that we hit it effectively. So in 2005, you go to the Bay Area, you do hear local artists on the radio. But that victory is not enough for us. That victory is not enough, because that's just a stall tactic so that they can continue to maybe misinform the community. So you have other people like my man Raheem Pierre, who's decided to go around the country, interview people from the inner city, get their perspectives, talk to artists, and then he brings to the forefront a documentary that he's going to drop in June called Radio Politrics to make sure the community understands what it takes to run a radio station and how these people are misleading us and abusing the airwaves. So these people deserve props. In New York City, 2002-2003, radio veteran Bob Law was sick and tired of the way that we were being mistreated in the media. So he brought together more than 1,000 people and held a tribunal in Harlem and brought everybody out there to talk about what was on with radio. 6 hours later, there was an earful that the city council people and everybody had. Started a campaign called Turn Off the Radio Campaign. People didn't pick this up. Fast forward to this year, Hot 97, which was one of the targeted stations, that's Emma's Broadcasting, decided to play a parody song making fun of the Asian community. They figured, you know what, these Asian folks, they're kind of small in number. They don't know anything. Nobody's going to hear them. But they didn't realize that some of those Asians that they pissed off were very good friends with the people from the Turn Off the Radio campaign. So black and Asians and Latinos all came together and brought the heat to Emmis Broadcasting, made their stocks plummet. Started strategically going, you know what, we're not going to talk about the DJs, Funkmaster Flex or Miss Jones and none of these people. We want to know Jeff Samoyan's name. We want to know Rick Cummings' name. We're going to put them on blast. And we started sending emails to advertisers and people, and this got everybody involved. The hip-hop community from all over the country was supporting the effort in New York to the point that they had to call a meeting. And here's this. This is what we're up against in 2005. Hip-hop pioneer Afrika Bambaataa is sitting in the room. People like Rosa Clemente from our sister station, BAI, an activist well-known in New York, is there. DJ Cut and Candy, all these people who mean something to our communities are sitting in the room, intelligent human beings. They're asking for community access. They're asking for racial sensitivity. And more importantly, saying, you know, every time we turn on the radio, we hear your DJs using the N-word and the B-word and other disparaging words that we say we don't want to hear anymore of. White program director who never programmed an urban station in his life sat up there and looked these people in the face, looked Afrika Bambaataa in the face, the man who started the hip-hop movement that he's making money off of. Said, no, we can't stop using the N-word because we don't want to lose our lower demographics. This is in 2005. This is the fight that we're dealing with. So when you turn on the radio and you go, what's going on? It's not the people in our neighborhood that's making these decisions. Let me just quote, I think it was Rick Cummings or Jeff Samoyan, who said, well, you know, we don't know what these young people, we don't know what's going on with these young people. How do I know? I'm a 50-year-old white guy. I don't know about hip-hop. Then why the hell do you have a license for the number one station in that market? This is the fight that we have. But we are winning it. First thing, I tell people all the time, recognize our victories. We shifted the conversation from talking about the artists and the shortcomings of the DJs to talking about the shortcomings and the lack of responsibility of the broadcast owners. So that's a major victory right there. And we will continue to bring the heat. Big shout out to the folks from Industry Ears who decided that, you know what, these folks are doing a smack fest where they get sisters to smack each other until they start bleeding. And then the corporation, Emma's Broadcasting, gives them $500 when one of them gives up. Well, they didn't think hip-hoppers were smart. We're all 30-plus. We all have houses and homes. One of them was a law student, found out that it's a violation of New York state laws to have a pugilistic competition. And then one of the fools from Emmis went on Hannity and Combs and said, it's just like a boxing match. So a few phone calls later, and Elliot Spitzer and a few city council conversations brought him up on charges and said, you can't have a pugilistic competition. You're violating New York City state law. These and others are victories that are taking place. And these victories come because of several things. One, we communicate with each other. Two, it's not about the individual and it's not about one organization, but it's about all of us looking out for the future generations that are coming up that are being seduced by these broadcasters day in and day out who think it's okay for them to do the things that they do because they don't live in the East Oaklands, they don't live in the South Sides of Chicago, they don't live in the Harlems, but we do, and we have to deal with the nonsense that they leave. So we're committed to it. Young women up in Boston, we got to give them a major shout out because they got sick and tired of what was going on and they decided to start their own radio station. Big shout out to my crew in Los Angeles. They started their own. Big shout out to people like Freemix and all those websites and podcasters. These are communities of color doing their own thing, creating their own media, trying to not only counteract what's going on, but to make themselves competitive and hopefully surpass some of these people who are misusing the airwaves today. So those people deserve props, and I wish that those stories could be told in more fuller detail, but I'm going to represent for them tonight and give them a round of applause because they're not here, but they're hard at work. Lastly, as I close, the big white elephant that's in the room that we're getting ready to deal with, the big white elephant that is determining a lot of the stuff that we have to deal with day in and day out, the big white elephant that is saying, you know what, we're going to play these nasty songs for seven-year-olds in the middle of the morning. We're going to keep some of these beefs going on because it makes us money, et cetera, et cetera. The payola word. A lot of people don't like to talk about it. The commissioners are here. We're making these recordings and making it known that what is on these airwaves is bought and paid for by corporations. We got to deal with that because nothing else that we do will matter if you got big-time money funding some of the nonsense that we're up against right now. And it doesn't stop with the records. Maybe some of the news things that we hear, as Commissioner Edelstein had alluded to, maybe those are bought and paid for, too. So don't talk about the war effort. You're paid not to. Let's not play any of the anti-war songs. There are four compilation albums out by hip-hop artists. Not one of them gets on the air. Who's paying for that not to happen? In closing, all of us got to continue to do three things. One, communicate with one another, continue to network with one another, use each other's resources, and more importantly, recognize that all of us have strengths and that we should use these to our full advantage to make sure that next year, when we come to this sort of gathering, that the landscape has significantly changed for the better. Thank you very much.
JBD. I'm John Nichols from Free Press. And I want you to take a look at yourselves. 2,500 people from 50 states, from the District of Columbia, which should have statehood, from Puerto Rico, all saying, JBD, we are with you in your struggle. You have heard a lot tonight about the fact that this is being broadcast on Pacifica, but understand what that means. We are on air tonight in Moscow, Idaho, in Benwood, West Virginia, in Redway, California, in Kettle Falls, Washington, in San Francisco, LA, Houston, Washington, Honolulu, Anchorage, Denver, Nashville. We are nationwide. And we are the new mainstream. Rupert Murdoch, you and your kind, you have sacrificed the right to be called mainstream media. We are the mainstream. Pacifica is not alternative. Pacifica is the mainstream. Community radio is the mainstream. Public radio is the mainstream. Indie media is the mainstream. The Nation, the Progressive, In These Times, Mother Jones, the magazines, these are the mainstream. Media justice is the mainstream. Media reform is the mainstream. We stand tonight on sacred ground. In this place, 132 years ago, just across that river, Elijah Lovejoy was killed at his press, defending his press against supporters of slavery, defending the right to speak out against the original sin of America, the slave trade. His struggle continues to this day, both in the work of the Coalition Against Police Crimes and Repression here in St. Louis, and in the work of the media reform movement. The struggle for racial justice cannot be separated from the struggle for media reform and vice versa. The struggle for media reform cannot be separated from the struggle for media justice, or racial justice. Unfortunately, that struggle is not carried on by big media with its Michael Jacksons and its runaway brides. It is not carried on by most of our politicians, with the exception of some of our folks here tonight. It is carried on, for the most part, by artists, like the folks Davey D spoke about, who speak truth to power. This movement wants the bread of news and honest debate, but it also wants the roses of independent film, poetry, and rock and roll. We want a poet, we want an author, we want a rock and roller, we want a woman who told us people have the power, we want the most courageous and consistent critic of the war in Iraq and injustice at home, we want Patti Smith.
Everybody, that was really nice. Nice of him to say. Thank you, John. This is Sean Michael Dargan. We've just met, and one of the most beautiful things about going all over the country, helping in any way that one can, is that you have the beautiful high pressure of performing with a complete stranger. And the way one does this is simply trust, mutual trust. This little song was written with a little salute to William Blake. William Blake, in his lifetime, never saw any success. He did a lot of beautiful work, poetry, paintings, but the most wonderful thing I think he did was to write poems and songs against child labor, against using children as chimney sweeps. He was horrified at the use and abuse of children in his time. He could not change it single-handedly, but he wrote poems and songs that resonated and eventually made change in his country, and we still look to at this time. His efforts, when I think of his efforts, you know, with so little recompense, except the fact that they were righteous efforts, I think of all of you. I think of all the activists. I'm so grateful for all of you. And so this song is for everyone. And just wanted to send a special salute to Amy Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
soul disposed, or a mission yet unclear. Advancing pole by pole, by chin breathed into my ear. Obey this simple code. One road is paved in gold. One road is just a road. In my blackened year, what a world, the schism, the pain in our existence was not as I envisioned. Boots that tramp from track to track, born down to the soul. One road was paved in gold. One road was just a road. Soul. One road is paved in gold. One road is just a road. Am I blinking? Yeah. Temptation, it is a hiss. Just a shovel spear. Brace yourself for bitter flack, for a life divine. A labyrinth of riches, never shall unwind. The words that bind the pilgrim sack are stitched into the blanket back. So throw off your stupid cloak, embrace all that you fear. Joy will conquer all despair. In my blanket, yeah. So throw off your stupid cloak. Embrace all that you fear. A human heart, pity a human face, and love the human form divine, and peace the human dress. Mercy, pity, and peace, and love, we pray in our distress. But mercy and shame. Shall embrace. It is the mercy. Thank you. This little song is for all children. Every child is our child, especially, I guess, for everyone. But I found when I became a mother myself, every child was my child. And when I see a child victim of war, victim of poverty, disease, every child is my child. Every child that is not fed is my child not fed. So this is for children. I was a wing in heaven blue, and on the ocean soared over Spain, and I was free. Nobody. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. I was a pawn, couldn't make a move, couldn't go nowhere, no future at all. Yet I was free, I needed nobody. It was beautiful, it was beautiful. And if there's one thing to do for you, you'd be a wing in heaven blue. I was a vision in another eye, and I saw nothing, no future at all. Yet I was free, I needed nobody. It was beautiful, it was beautiful. And if there's one thing could do for you, you'd be a wing in heaven blue. vision and she is connecting with me. Here I go and I don't know why I spin so ceaselessly till I lose my sense of gravity. Well, thank you. We're doing pretty good, right? The beautiful world of strangers and no more strangers, no more. But I'd like to do one more song, and just wanted to. I was thinking about various things, listening. To our last speaker, and I myself am 58 years old, and I would just like to say, I don't like to complain about not getting airplay because, well, you know, it's not my, I just seems conceited in a way because, you know, I can't presume that I should get airplay, but I will say that the same 50-year-olds or whatever age they are who are choosing to put so much disgusting crap on the radio often think that, you know, the songs that my band write are much too controversial because they deal with things like anti-war, you know, being against war, that the people should unite, that the individual is important, that the people united can make great change. All very frightening stuff. And so I look forward to change as much as anyone, but it really upsets me, really, that, you know, when speaks about, you know, so many songs written against war, when the subject of peace becomes too hot to handle, but on the other hand, you have to listen and or be assaulted by music that speaks, has, you know, is so violent against children, is sexually violent, is, you know, has no real redeeming qualities except to numb us to violence. So thank you for your, thank you, David, and thank everybody. You know, you're all helping us, and I just appreciate all that you're doing. And I appreciate this fella that we're going to sing about. I'm nervous. I don't usually play this. But it's only one chord, so I got no excuse for screwing it up. When he was a boy, he was afraid of the dark. And his mother would bring a lamp and sit at his feet and pray and fast as he slept. She would pray and fast at his feet and he would dream. He was dreaming of his sisters dancing in a ring, dressed in white muslin, with flowers in the hair. He was whispering into his God's ear, let children be so, let the children be so. And the lamplight flickered, flickered, and his mother withered like Job. Dreaming, watching flowers fall, and Tilak's trumpet proceeded to call. Awake, little man, awake from your slumber, and get 'em with the numbers. Get 'em with the numbers. Oh. Oh. Hey. Hey. He was small and shy. In the cast of his mind was Macario, was Macario, as the secret verse that he scrawled in the dust, that he scrawled in the dust, on the floor,
you'll beg my pardon. I was trespassing. The sacred garden, and the blossoms fell, and they dropped like candy, and the people cried, Gandhi, Gandhi.
Thank you, everybody. Sean.
Patti Smith. And let's hear it for guitarist Sean Michael Dargan. Who was great. I mean, I know Patti was doing rhythm on that one, but and I don't play much guitar, but I think I could have done Patti's part on that one. For those of you listening on the radio, you don't know the great job that our court reporter, captionist, Patti White is doing. She is producing real-time You're welcome. The word is prospicience. Hi, I'm Patti. I'm not going to write what Mr. Franken says anymore. Because I heard him backstage bad-mouthing deaf people. Let's get him in the parking lot. Jim Hightower has spent decades battling the